You are listening to Black Girl Missing, a podcast that covers stories of Black girls who were reported missing when they were under the age of 18. When Black girls go missing, their cases are severely underreported in mainstream media. We want to shift the narrative. We invite you to listen, learn, and do whatever you can to help us bring as many girls home as possible. You can find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcast. Please remember to subscribe and leave a review on your favorite platform so we can keep bringing you the stories of Black girls that need to be told. Due to the sensitive and sometimes graphic nature of these cases, we advise you to use caution when listening.
Hey everyone, we are so happy to be back. I am Feminisa Jones.
I'm Asa.
And I'm Nikki.
And we are kicking off season two of Black Girl Missing. Woo! I think we should clap for that. I think we should clap. That's amazing. Oh my gosh. We got through a whole season. And we're kicking off season two, and they'll probably be like 25 seasons because Black girls are always missing, and there's so much to talk about. We've got a few changes. We got some things that are different, right? We got some things on board coming up for this season. I know we're talking about getting a Patreon. We're going to set up a Patreon because we would love to have the support of our listeners, and we've actually been recording some bonus content for our Patreon subscribers. So look for that to come about. Check our website for that. We are also no longer recording with Full Service Radio. We are very appreciative for season one and, Jack and Alexia and the team over there, Full Service Radio, for giving us the opportunity really and supporting us as we put this content out here. Now we're kind of doing it on our own.
Yeah. COVID kind of shook up the whole situation.
It did.
Yeah.
And now we're going to just do this independently and see what happens. And hopefully our content remains just as good as it was last season. Or better.
Or better. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, we can only get better. Like we've learned so much from working with the Full Service team, and we learned so much kind of doing this when we had to switch from going into the studio and coming, into our own homes. We learned a whole lot about that. And, so as we go out and continue this venture, we just look forward to continuing to amplify the stories of Black girls that have gone missing, helping these families, girls that are currently missing. This is really what we do. And we're so excited that we get to bring you another season of this. We got a new intro. We got some music.
I want to thank Siraj Khalif for producing our very own Black Girl Missing theme song. He worked really hard on it. It's a good song. I like it. I love it. It's great. And it's just for us.
I love it. Thank you so much. So we're going on bigger and better things for this new season. And we're happy that you're here. We're happy that you're riding with us. And let's dig into this episode. Episode one, right? Season two. Episode one.
That sounds so exciting.
Amazing. All right.
We open each show reviewing cases of girls who are currently missing that we call the Aisha Alert. We encourage you to pay close attention, check our social media, and help us help the families who are still seeking answers and long for their loved one's safe return. We'd like to note that we create these lists of currently missing Black girls in real time, so by the time the podcast episodes are released, there may have been changes. We will have information on each case posted on our social media channels so that you can stay updated. Breasia Terrell is a 10-year-old girl from Davenport, Iowa. She was last seen in the early hours of July 10th, 2020, in the 2700 block of 53rd Street in Davenport, Iowa. Breasia is described as about 4'5" and weighing about 75 pounds, with black hair styled in locks and brown eyes. She was last seen wearing a white t-shirt, shorts, and white or pink flip-flops. Davenport police asked those with information to contact them at 563-326-6126 or email missingchild@davenportiowa.com. Deja Tucker is a 15-year-old from Omaha, Nebraska. She went missing on July 3rd, 2020. Deja is described as 5'7", weighing 155 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. If you have any information, contact Omaha Police Department at 402-444-5600. Dejanae Anthony is a 15-year-old from Cincinnati, Ohio. She was last seen on August 3rd, 2020. She's described as 5'4" and 130 pounds, with brown hair and brown eyes. Anyone with information is asked to contact the Cincinnati Police Department at 513-765-1212. Today's episode is about Aisha Jaquila Degree. Aisha went missing from her home in Shelby, North Carolina on February 14th, 2000 at the age of 9 years old. She grew up in a religious Baptist home with her parents, Harold and Aquila Degree, and her older brother, O'Brien. She's described by her family as happy, shy, quiet, and obedient. Aisha thoroughly enjoyed church and always looked forward to going to weekly Bible study at Macedonia Missionary Baptist Church. Because of her religious devotion, Aisha's parents did their best to insulate their children from influences of the secular world, so they watched limited television and the family did not have a computer in the house. Aquila was quoted in Jet magazine as saying, "Every time you turn on the TV, there was some pedophile who had lured somebody's child away." Although very protective of their children, the Degrees did allow them some autonomy to let themselves in the house after school and trusted that they'd be okay until they returned home from work. Her mother would get in later in the afternoon and her father would get in late in the evening as he worked second shift as a dock loader. Being a latchkey kid wasn't a cause for concern, especially because the kids had immediate family in the neighborhood that they could go to in case of emergency, such as their aunt Alicia, who they spent the day with while school was out on the Friday before Aisha went missing. Aisha was a fourth grade student at Falston Elementary School and also played point guard on her youth basketball team. She's described as an outstanding student with an exceptional attendance record who had a knack for science and math. She also enjoyed reading and writing and had ambitions to become an illustrator. Before her disappearance, her English class had just finished reading the book, The Whipping Boy by Sid Fleischman, a children's book about two kids running away from home but eventually return. The Saturday before she went missing, she played in her team's first game of the season, which they ended up losing and she fouled out of. Her parents were called. She was really upset about this, cried with her teammates because she felt she had let them down. But she recovered and was able to sit and watch her brother's game afterward. All this, I kind of put this picture of her together because we don't go into like a lot of, mm-hmm. of the happier points of some of the missing girls because they do come, a lot of the cases we've covered, the girls have come from homes that there were issues, there was abuse, there were mm-hmm. some iffy right. things, but from what I could read about her case, her family was quote unquote picture perfect. So right. her disappearance.
This sounds like a happy family, very right. nice, very chill. Yeah.
Yeah. So on Sunday, February 13th, the Degree family went to church and then went back to Aunt Alicia's home. And the family spent the afternoon together until Harold, Aisha's father, had to get ready to go to work that evening. At around 8 p.m., Aisha and her brother went to bed. They both turned in earlier than usual because they had a sleepover with their cousins and stayed up late the night before. At around 9 p.m., she was awakened by a thunderstorm and a power outage caused by a car crash nearby. At about 12:30 a.m., Harold returned home from work. The power returned shortly after, and he checked on his kids in their room. They were both asleep in their beds, although some sources have said that Aisha was reported as being awake and in the living room when Harold returned home. I couldn't find a lot of corroborating reports about that, but I did see it in one. He stayed up for a few more hours and before going to bed, checked on the kids again at 2:30 a.m. and both were still asleep in bed. Shortly after the last bed check, O'Brien, Aisha's brother, said that he awoke to hearing her getting out of bed to use the bathroom, but also thought that he heard her get back into bed, so he went back to sleep. At 5:45 a.m., Akila, Aisha's mother, woke up and got the baths for the kids started since they couldn't take one the night before due to the power outage. At 6:30, she went to wake up the kids and found O'Brien still sound asleep, but did not see Aisha in her bed. She thought this was peculiar, but she wasn't yet worried. She checked the rest of the house, expecting to find her, but after she went outside to check their two vehicles, hoping to find her, she started to panic and woke up Harold. Harold advised her to call his mother to see if Aisha was there, but she wasn't. Akila then called her own mother and got the same answer, so Harold called the police.
Wow. So they live close enough to their parents a possibility that she could have gone there. Okay.
Right. So the police arrived about 10 minutes later at 6:40 a.m. Search dogs were brought in, but they were unable to pick up her scent, possibly due to the thunderstorm.
Wow. Damn.
Nonetheless, Aisha's family and the police searched the local neighborhood, but no trace of her could be found. By noon, over 60 people, including residents in the area and church congregation and a helicopter with infrared heat detection, were aware of what was transpiring and went to help in the search. Despite an all-afternoon search of the nearby woods and fields, nothing was found besides a mitten that didn't belong to Aisha or anyone in her family.
What on earth?
Yeah.
I want to stop you just for a second.
Mm-hmm.
We've mentioned this before, but the fact that her parents called the police right away is so important.
Yes.
Because so many people think you have to wait, 48 hours or something like that?
To report a missing person.
Mm-hmm. And you don't. That is a lie. I don't know where people get that from. But they gotta stop thinking that you have to call the police immediately when you're
especially
child.
When it's a child. When it's a child, you call immediately.
That time frame is so important for action.
Yes.
And it's like they have a complete show called The First 48
about
how the first 48 hours are integral to get information for when a crime takes place. So when somebody goes missing, it's not much different. You really need those first hours when they first disappear.
Yeah.
I think also because they knew she would not run away.
Yeah.
They knew that, you know what I mean? Like some of the other families and stories, they kind of get the sense that there's maybe some issues or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe they just went out or whatever. They'd be back. They've done this before. But this family knows their daughter.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
When Aisha's family examined her bedroom for clues, they found that her backpack was missing, which she kept her house keys in, along with her Tweety Bird purse and an assortment of clothing. Moreover, all the doors and windows in the homes had been locked, indicating Aisha left on her own volition. More than likely, at the time that O'Brien said he heard her getting up to go to the bathroom a little after 2:30. A truck driver and a motorist reported having seen her walking south along Highway 18, wearing a long sleeve white t-shirt and white pants just north of its junction with Highway 180, about a block away from her home, between 3:45 and 4:15 a.m. They reported this to police after seeing a TV report about her disappearance that same evening. The motorist said that he turned his car around because he thought it was strange such a small child would be out by herself at that hour. He circled three times and saw Aisha run into the woods by the roadside and disappear. It was a rainy night, and the witness said the storm was quote-unquote raging when he saw her. County Sheriff Dan Crawford said, "We're pretty sure it was her because of the description they gave are consistent with what we know she was wearing." He added that they both saw her at the same place heading in the same direction.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody got out the car to go get her?
This is incensing. I'm really upset right now because you circled three times. Mm-hmm. You knew it was a small child. And you just were like, nah.
You just kind of shrugged. Yeah.
She's children of the corn. Whatever.
Yeah.
Let's be who she is.
Yeah.
I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because what the hell?
It's an absurd situation.
It's absurd.
Yeah.
If I see a child, I'm driving. Like, even when I drive a lot and I'm on the highways a lot. I drive at night a lot. If I see somebody, I always notice when I see somebody on the side of the road. And if it was a child by themselves, even now, I see teenagers, I slow down a little bit. I'm looking like, do they look like they okay? Do they know where they going? Because I care.
Yeah.
But this is the thing, how you circle three times and you don't even get out the car.
Right.
That was enough effort for them.
Oh, gosh.
That is just ridiculous.
Okay. With the new leads to work on, the police searched heavily in the woods where witnesses said she ran off into. And on February 15th, they uncovered a shed of a nearby business, Turner Upholstery, and discovered that Aisha seemed to have sheltered there from the storm because they found candy wrappers, a pencil and marker, and a Mickey Mouse-shaped hair bow, which Aisha's family confirmed were hers. On February 16th, Akilah realized that Aisha's bedroom was missing her favorite clothing, including a pair of blue jeans with a red stripe. A week later, about 9,000 man hours had been invested into the search of the 2 to 3 mile radius of where she had been last seen. Flyers were posted all over the area, and 300 leads ranging from possible sightings to tips about abandoned houses and wells where Aisha might have ended up. The local search was called off. We have never really had that first good substantial lead, said County Sheriff Dan Crawford at a news conference, but urged the media to keep the story alive.
Okay. You don't have a substantial lead, but you done found all this stuff from her room, all these personal items.
Mm-hmm.
You done had witnesses saying that they seen her, but you don't have no substantial lead, so you call it off after a week?
Yeah.
We're just going to pack it up instead of looking. We haven't found the lead, but we're just not going to look for one.
Right. Now, it was the local authorities that called off the search.
Okay.
At the news conference on February 22nd, Crawford said he was going long range with the search for Aisha. Both the FBI and North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation got involved then and put her on their respective databases of missing children. While the local agencies were done searching in the area of her home, they were still following everything.
Oh, okay. Oh, so the FBI, they're willing, the feds are willing to look, but the local people are like, you know, I guess maybe they felt their resources were tapped out or something.
Right. And I guess it was, they figured that it had gone on so long that she was probably further away, since there was nothing within that, that small radius. So during the month of March, in order to spread more awareness to the public, the DeGree family began selling t-shirts with Aisha's picture on the front. But this quickly came to a halt once they discovered someone was trying to pocket the money made in this charitable cause.
It's always somebody.
Yeah. But with the money they did raise, they offered a $5,000 reward for any information leading to Aisha's whereabouts. Her case also made headlines across national television programs, including the Montel Williams Show, America's Most Wanted, and The Oprah Winfrey Show. Aside from this, her case hasn't been featured in the spotlight other than local news stations from time to time. This also goes into why I was talking so heavily about her, her family, her upbringing, because that plays into why she got on Montel and Oprah and all that. From Akilah's account of what Aisha had taken with her, investigators believe she had planned and prepared for this departure over several days preceding her disappearance. She's not the typical runaway, said State Bureau of Investigation agent Bart Burpew. Another expert, Dan Ermini of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, noted that most children who run away are at least 12 years old. An FBI agent also pointed to the lack of an issue she might have had prior to running away. So there's no dysfunctional family, there was no poor academic performance, but still investigators believe that was the most likely explanation for her departure and disappearance. But for some reason, she either got off track or was abducted after leaving on her own.
That baby got her a little blanket. Put all her favorite items in it.
With a tied it to a stick.
Yeah. She tied it to a stick. She read that book. She said, I'm out of here. Wow. That little girl. How many of us? Okay, I don't know about y'all.
How many of us
used to think about, I'm going to run away. I'm going to go.
I've done it. I made it down the street to my neighbor's garage. That's it.
Yeah. Oh no! Like I'm really thinking about it. Like she really probably had, you know, like the little kids. She had a little stick,
and apparently all she had was candy bars with her.
She had candy bars. The baby took the candy bars.
Yeah.
She took the candy. She took her probably a favorite doll. Put on a favorite pair of pants, and she said, "I'm out of here."
But like a 9-year-old doesn't disappear like that on their own.
She's not thinking.
Right.
She's not thinking. She went for a walk. Like, they probably got sidetracked with her little satchel. Got caught in the storm.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm just thinking about it. Like, she, you know what I mean? She wasn't probably nothing even wrong. Maybe she was a little sad because of the game or whatever. Game. Mm-hmm. But, oh, man.
Yeah. As a routine procedure in missing person cases, Aisha's family members underwent polygraph testing. All passed with flying colors. The lead investigators in the case also traveled to Quantico, Virginia to have a profile created of a possible suspect, if this was indeed a case of abduction. Yet, using this profile, they were unable to locate any prominent suspects. As Aisha's case was turning cold, on August 3rd, 2001, 18 months later, 26 miles north of Shelby in Burke County, the opposite direction of where Aisha was seen walking, a contractor at a construction project unearthed a backpack that was wrapped in two plastic trash bags and buried. It was confirmed to be Aisha's because it had her name and phone number printed on it.
Look, a black family, you send your kids to school, you put their name on everything.
I remember everything. When I first, like my first day of kindergarten and first grade, my mom and dad drew like a little, I think it was a clown, laminated it, had my name, my phone number, what class I was in, and safety pinned it to me.
See, my mother put my name on every single piece of clothing that I had. So my mama didn't have a whole lot of money, but every beginning of the school year, she would go to Conway. And so my older listeners going to remember what Conway was. And she went to Conway with her little $100. Mm-hmm. And was able to get me like 3 weeks worth of clothes. Okay. And she put her name, but she put my name, phone number, and my address on every single piece of clothes, every coat, every book bag I ever had, my shoes. Mm-hmm. If there was a tag, it had my name on it.
Yeah.
Because kids were stealing stuff and taking stuff. And I started doing that with my son. Because folks try to steal stuff and take stuff. So, parents, put your kids' names on their stuff, please. Mm-hmm. Put your contact information on the stuff, please.
And kids like to leave things just sitting.
Listen.
They leave with a jacket and come home without one. Where your jacket at?
I don't know.
I left it on the bus. But that bus driver knows it belonged to you because your name is in it.
Yep. So the FBI took the backpack to their headquarters for further forensic analysis, but they didn't make it known to the public what was found inside.
That's weird.
Yeah. With the latest lead in the case, the police thoroughly examined the construction site, discovered a pair of men's khaki pants and skeletal remains, but the those belong to an animal.
What? Well, hold up.
Oh, man.
That just took a turn for me. Yeah. And my initial thought was very morose.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I'm thinking too, like, did a man lure her with a puppy?
Who knows?
Despite
this discovery, Aisha's case wasn't producing any promising leads. Her case went cold again. Though the police did announce they believe Aisha left her residence on her own free will and met with foul play. The DeGrees took steps to keep Aisha's memory and the case alive in the public's mind. In 2008, they established a scholarship in her name for a deserving local student. They host an annual walk to raise awareness and money to fund their search that starts at their home and ends at a missing persons billboard for Aisha along Highway 18 near where she was last seen. The walk was originally held on February 14th, but it changed to February 7th in 2015 and February 6th in 2016 as Harold and Akilah felt it was not fair to participants to make Valentine's Day a somber occasion. Pictures of Aisha, both real and those showing her as she might appear in later years, created by investigators to help the search, still decorate the DeGrees' home. "I fully expect her to walk through the door," Kayla says. She lamented in a 2013 interview with Jet Magazine that her daughter's disappearance has not gotten as much media attention over the years as some subsequent cases of missing children. She believed it was because Aisha was Black. "Missing white children get more attention. I don't understand why," she said. "I know if you ask them, they'll say it's not racial. Oh, really? I'm not going to argue because I have common sense."
It's right. Literally because they are white.
Yeah.
And I just heard something the other day about JonBenet Ramsey.
Still.
And last season, we talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot go one full calendar year without hearing about that child.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not taking away from what happened to her. It was horrible. It was awful. But she's not the only missing child in history.
Exactly.
We don't get an opportunity to hear so many other stories of Black children, brown children, immigrant children. We don't get to hear about them because we're watching stuff about JonBenet Ramsey every quarter. Like, mm-hmm. It's ridiculous to me.
Yeah. 13 years after her backpack was discovered in January 2014, lead detective in Aisha's case hoped to catch a break when U.S. Marshals arrested 52-year-old Donald Preston Ferguson at his residence in Spartanburg, South Carolina, for the 1990 murder of a 7-year-old, Shalonda Poole, who was found strangled, stabbed, and sexually assaulted behind a Greensboro, North Carolina elementary school. Shalonda shared a room with her twin sister and mysteriously vanished on July 21st, 1990, between 6 and 8 a.m. When she was reported missing, many people helped search for her, including Donald Ferguson. He had known Shalonda's family for about a month and had even been to her home days beforehand playing cards with her family. Her body was uncovered one day later, bound and gagged. She suffered 19 stab wounds to the neck and was manually strangled. After a thorough investigation into Donald Ferguson and a possible connection to Aisha DeGree's disappearance, he was considered to not have any involvement in her case. In December 2014, he pled guilty to Shalonda's murder and was convicted of first-degree murder and first-degree sexual assault and was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. In February 2015, the Cleveland County Sheriff's Office and FBI began to re-examine Aisha's case, going through all the evidence collected and re-interviewing people from the initial investigation. During this process, a viable new lead was made known in May 2016. law enforcement announced to the public that there may have been sightings of Aisha entering a dark green early 1970s Lincoln Continental Mark IV or a Ford Thunderbird with rust along the wheel wells. 3 years later, in October 2018, the Cleveland County Sheriff's Office released the possible clues from her backpack that was found in 2001.
Oh, now we get the details. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Awesome. She finally released this to the public via Facebook and asked for the public's assistance. The first piece of evidence was the book McElligot's Pool by Dr. Seuss. It had apparently been checked out of the Falston Elementary School library around the time of Aisha's disappearance, but the school didn't contain any records dating that far back. The second clue was a white t-shirt with a red collar and matching sleeves, featuring a picture of the band The New Kids on the Block on the front. Yes.
She was a New Kids fan.
But New Kids came out when I was little.
Right. Mm.
You guys got to understand, as an old new Kids on the Block fan who has recently gone to a concert, I will tell you that they have survived every iteration of every generation over like 5 to 10 years each. Every 5 years, they get a new brand.
A nine-year-old in the year 2000.
Yes.
Fan of
yes. Yes.
Houseway.
Yeah.
Because I seen it myself. The kids, they're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. They're at the concert. One of them got on the stage. You could tell that girl was die hard for this 57-year-old man. I couldn't believe it. It's a whole new generation.
Their parents have to love them.
Their parents love them.
Yeah.
And it's possible that her parents loved her and then taught her the joys of New Kids on the Block. My 9-year-old was a Michael Jackson stan? My 13-year-old loved the Beatles?
But when we go back to how her parents were raising her, they didn't let the kids watch TV. They didn't let them have internet. They were very specific about keeping her and her brother kind of away from.
But New Kids was real soft though. They were allowable for the church crowd.
I guess.
That's fair. But
her you know what I mean? Like, said, maybe that was...
Her parents never said they were fans either. Like, that's part of why that shirt was like, huh? Yeah.
I'm just saying that we don't know. She could have been an undercover New Kids on the Block fan, and I'm not going to hold it against her. She was hanging tough with a little book.
Okay.
A little satchel, okay?
Where was I?
This is why we don't, you know, listen, I mean, we have to remind people that these stories are super, super serious, but, you know, there's always ways to look at it. And of course, we're sad about it, but it's really funny that this 9-year-old girl had a New Kids on the Block shirt.
Yeah.
I love it.
If it was hers.
Yeah. Right.
So when they released all this information to the public, almost 15 years after she went missing and after they found it, they're hoping that those items would jog someone's memory or whether or not they saw her before she vanished. But as of today, there are still no prominent suspects in the case, despite the latest information.
Okay. So if somebody goes missing 18 years ago, don't you think that maybe you should have released that information when you found it?
Yeah.
You're jogging 18-year-old memories.
Right. That's the, like, they say that finding that backpack was like a bombshell in their discovery phase, but didn't release it until 18 years later. And didn't even do like a press conference. It was released on Facebook.
That's wild to me. Like, it just seems so negligent. It seems so stupid. And sometimes I think when we look through these cases, we can look back hindsight 2020 and be like, okay, why did they do this? This is nonsensical. This doesn't make sense. But at the time, they seem to think that it's okay. And I guess that's, you know, the human error and the flaws and a lot of this stuff. And you know, it doesn't just happen with the black girls. We know that it happens on all these cases and things like that. But I mean, come on, some of this stuff is just so glaring. It's like, why did it take you 18 years to tell us that there was a New Kids on the Block shirt?
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
But throughout all these years, the small town of Shelby, North Carolina, still has missing pictures of Aisha plastered all throughout the area, and blue ribbons are tied around trees and light posts representing her case and that it's not been forgotten. And while Aisha's case may have gone cold, her family is still working to find her and holding out hope that she'll return home.
I'm curious about one thing. Mm-hmm. They lived in a neighborhood with so many family members. Nobody saw anything. I just feel like at the time of day, sure, there aren't really people outside. You have a storm. It's dark out. Mm-hmm. Nobody saw anything.
I can believe this just because when reading about the area she lived in, they're saying there weren't really many lights around. It was a pretty dark rural-ish area. And I'm thinking about where I grew up. Mm-hmm. It's not rural, but it's a suburban area. It's pretty far back from main roads and stuff like that. And at night, it's pitch black. Even with the street lights, you can't see anything that isn't directly under a street light. And if you go into the woods, mm-hmm. you are in, that's it. Like, if nobody catches, if nobody catches you in that split second while you're under the street light, nobody's gonna mm-hmm. see you. And if she's leaving at 2:30 in the morning, I can absolutely understand, like, because that's one of those times where it's not like people are switching shifts and getting home from work at that time.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So.
I know Shelby, North Carolina. I've been out there. I had to go out for a funeral out there one time. It is very much everybody knows everybody, mm-hmm. you know, so that definitely raises the eyebrow. But at the same time, like you said, it is a very rural, you know, it's kind of one of those places, low key, small town, mm-hmm. you know, kind of thing. And that's why they're able to have these blue ribbons and these walks and all these kinds of things, because she was a part of that, part of the fabric of that community.
Right.
And I'm wondering why she's found the opposite direction. Nobody looked that way.
Right.
They only went in that one way.
I don't know the experience that particular town's police force has in missing.
That may be it too.
Because it would have made sense if you're searching an area, you go out in all directions.
Yeah.
But I like they are also
maybe they underestimated how far she could go.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think when they found that she had been in that shed, they were thinking, oh, well, she has to be nearby. They're not thinking somebody saw her after she was in that shed and took her.
Right.
Did you hear anything? Did you read anything about them digging up the land around there? Maybe looking for shallow graves or anything?
Not a peep about that.
But they did find animal skeletons.
A year later in a construction site after a contractor found that backpack.
Yeah, so what that just kind of looks like to me, you know, after the true crime aficionado that I am, that, you know, she was probably killed. You know what I mean? I don't know. I feel like she was, and her body was dumped mm-hmm. there, and maybe in the construction site, maybe she's buried under a building or something, or she was put mm-hmm. in some kind of, you know, they had the machines that mix up the things and stuff, you know, kind of in a barrel or something like that, you know, and it, you know, she definitely seems like she was taken. Some probably, you know, hopefully mm-hmm. nobody did anything too bad. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But the way it goes with these people, these animals out here, you know, you never know, but I don't know. It just kind of seems like them finding her backpack there, you know, some khaki pants. I don't know.
Yeah.
If I was going to hypothesize, I would say that the backpack is a trophy, because if you did something to her, why wouldn't you destroy the backpack? Why would you bury it? And you buried it in a place where you know people may go. Like, everybody knows that construction around highways is common, whether they are clearing out areas for development or if they're widening the roads or whatever the case may be. Everybody knows highways are ripe for construction. And also, I think that she walked off looking for adventure. She read that book.
Yeah.
She was smart. She was really smart. They talked about how smart she was. And a lot of kids around that age, when they're really smart, we can sometimes conflate that with maturity. Like just because you're really smart or you're clever or you're book smart or you're sharp as a whip, it doesn't mean that you are more mature, but we can sometimes project that onto kids who are really smart. Like, because you're really smart, you should be more responsible. No, I'm nine.
And that happens also with Black children, right? Like, even within our own communities, other people tend to have us look older, but we also project that onto our children in many ways. You know, I'm looking at, I just took a picture of my son the other day, and he's 13, and he's my height, and I'm 6 feet tall, you know? And so people would look at him and think, and he is a smart kid or whatever, but he does some knucklehead things because he's only 13 years old. You know what I'm saying? And I have to remind myself of that. Like, when I get frustrated, like, well, why didn't you think of this thing? And I'm like, you know what? He's only 13. You know, I got to keep reminding myself. So definitely.
Right.
And I really, I think that she just ran into foul play. Like, I really, I don't think that, just judging off of the really tight community that her family seems to have had, I'm not saying it's impossible for somebody to have targeted her, but it just doesn't look that way to me.
Yeah, no.
It looks like she just ran into the wrong person.
Yeah.
And it's hard to tell who you're gonna run into on the side of a highway. There's all sorts of things going on in those wooded areas off of interstates.
Right. And like, what part of what sticks out, which I mentioned before, is despite her family being what looks like the quote, like the perfect victims, it's still, they had that spot on Montel and Oprah. And then it's still, they couldn't keep that momentum going nationally, as opposed to, like we mentioned, a JonBenet.
Right.
And it's one of those things that's, like, you try and do everything right as not just the parent, but you have that extra pressure being Black on top of it. And all of that still didn't help with trying to get your baby back or trying to get people to pay attention to your child.
Right. I'm really excited, though, that she got so much attention that she did.
Yeah.
Especially because Aisha was she was a darker skinned girl, and we know that can always play a factor in how much attention you garner when you're missing. Is she's darker. She was very pretty, but I think that a lot of looking for her and a lot of the attention she received was about her family, was about them being very religious, was about them being, you know, like, oh, well, she was sheltered, she came from a nice home. Because a lot of times when these kids come from homes that may be a little bit more tumultuous, it's like, oh, well, you got problems at home, so that's probably why you're missing. Okay, bye. And you know, so this situation was a little bit different. And I'm glad to know that they actually did go as far as they did to try to find her, even though I think their investigation was a bit weak.
And like, you know, it also wasn't a spicy type of story. There was nothing, because, you know, when the stories that stick around in the news, there's always something that comes up. Oh, somebody was having an affair. There was something going on at school that the parents didn't know about. None of that happened in this case. It was very kind of a cut and dry. She's gone. There's nothing to look at as far as her personal life, because it's picture perfect. So, that loses people's interest as well.
People love the drama. Yeah, they want it to be salacious. They want it to be, you know.
She's got an ethnic name too. And her mom's got an ethnic name. And I mean, we point out all these kinds of things. You know, Aisha Jakilla. Her mom's name is Akilla. You know what I mean? Like, these are things that I think about, you know, people being uncomfortable even pronouncing the name. They don't want to go far with the investigation. We know that happens. So,
right.
You know, you know, hopefully, you know, if she's still alive, we'll be sharing this information on our social media. We'll be posting. There's some progressed pictures, you know, what she would look like now, which we definitely want to share. We'll be getting into that. But yeah, season two is here. Episode one is done. And we look forward to coming back next time. And we'll be seeing y'all for the rest of this season. We're really excited about how well received this podcast has been. And we are really looking forward to growing our audience, connecting with new people, and sharing more of these stories. Black Girl Missing podcast is researched, written, and produced by us. It is a labor of love by three concerned Black women who want justice for missing Black girls. Today's episode was written by Asa and produced by Feminista Jones. The Black Girl Missing theme was produced by Siraj Khalif. Find us wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Be sure to follow us on social media. At Twitter, we are BLK Girl Missing, Black Girl Missing. On Facebook, we are Black Girl Missing Pod. On Instagram, we are Black Girl Missing Podcasts. And you can visit our website for more information about each case, blackgirlmissingpod.com. Contact us on social media or email us at blackgirlmissingpodcast@gmail.com with any tips, feedback, or names of girls you want to look into.